in my multiply embedded metaphor, I told her the metaphor about blocking, finding the hose and finding the kinks, right? And I never made the conscious connection for her. So when you tell somebody a metaphor, you don't want them to make the, you don't want to tell them what it means, because then you've just defeated the purpose of the metaphor. That's just like telling somebody, hey, this is what you need to do to fix your problem. They're like, yeah, thanks. If I could do that, I would, you know? That's because they haven't owned it. It's not part of who they are at the unconscious level. So if somebody comes to me, sometimes they'll come to me and they'll say, was that metaphor for me, or did you mean this way, or did you mean, you know, was this what you were saying? I know what you were saying, and I, it's like, if you tell them that, then it won't do the purpose of the metaphor, right? So what you do with multiply embedded metaphors is you're going to stop them, yet paste them to the resources that they need inside that metaphor. So the first one I told was about unkinking the hose, and the hose begins to flow. Or actually, I told her about finding the spots in the hose. I didn't finish it. This is how I did it. I started the metaphor, the first metaphor. So this is metaphor one, that's metaphor two, that's metaphor three. So I started the metaphor. I told her about how I was gardening and everything was kinked up. And my father said, all you got to do is find those spots where the hose is kinked up. And I began to go back. And I remember unfolding one of the spots. And some of the water began to flow. And then I just stopped the story right there. And I started another story. I said, it's kind of like this time when I was at Disneyland. Because she was talking about visiting Disneyland, and she had just been to Disneyland, and I said, it's kind of like this time when I was at Disneyland, and I was there with my friend, and I mentioned one of her son's names. So now I'm bringing in characters that she knows. And I said, because she's going to relate more to it, it's going to cause her to fish for the information more. So I mentioned, I was there with my friend, and we were in the lines, and they had all the lines were blocked up, and it's interesting, because I hadn't talked to my friend in a long time. Remember, she wasn't talking to her son she hadn't been talking to her family. I hadn't talked to my friend in a long time, so it gave us a lot of time to talk as we were standing there. It's interesting, because it bugged me at first that we were standing in these long lines, but then I realized that it was our opportunity to talk. And what was interesting, too, is they've got these free passes, or these, you ever see those passes they have at Disneyland now, like where you don't have to wait in the lines if you don't want to? It's kind of like the lines there, and everybody thinks that they have to stand still. But then somebody came up to me and said, hey, you know, you can just get one of those fast passes. I guess that's what it's called. You know? And you should see the circulation in those lines. Because they just move like that. You know, now this, it was good, though, because it gave my friend Bob, or whatever the name was I was using, my friend Bob and I really a chance to talk and connect like we hadn't connected in a while. Then we got the fast pass, and we realized that the circulation was much quicker than we thought it was. And we got on, and we really began to enjoy the ride. And we were laughing and having fun like we hadn't in years. And then I went on to another story about the computer network in our company being gummed up and not being able to communicate from one place to another. And it was all about the network and the congestion in the network, and figuring out and bringing in the expert, the person who really knew how to undo it. And then, so I told like two or three stories like that. And then inside here, I gave some direct suggestions, because normally what you do is give direct suggestions after, so you tell like two or three stories, not ending them. You can either end abruptly or just kind of let them go. Then what you do is you give them some direct suggestions inside here. In the case of doing an intervention, you might tell them some stories like that and then do your intervention in there. Like, let's say you were going to do a swish pattern, or let's say you were going to do a submodality switch, or you're going to do something else. So this is one way you could do it. Go in, tell them their metaphors, and then do a couple of pieces of intervention there, and then finish your metaphors. Now, if you finish your metaphors, you're going to finish them in the reverse order that you went into them. So if you started with one, then two, then three, when you're coming back out, you do three, then two, then one. You'd finish three, then two, then one. What happens is that makes the most impact here inside the intervention. And it also makes the metaphors most memorable and causes the unconscious mind to spin on them after they leave. And that's the type of intervention. This is the type of magical intervention where people find themselves still changing after they've left and wondering why. So, like, maybe they'll dream about it, or maybe they'll, You know, it's like stuck there in their unconscious mind, and they have dreams about it. And you can actually really make some powerful change work with metaphors. So I've really grown I've gotten a big affinity for metaphors, multiply embedded metaphors. A trainer's training will actually teach you how to do it from a stage and how to do it with a class. But at this point, I want you to understand how you could do it inside a therapeutic intervention or inside a one-on-one communication. How could you tell those metaphors? And the basically all you do is you chunk up on the issue, and you're going to think of two or three different metaphors for it. And then you'll start them, but never finish them, or not finish them at first. So you might start one, leave it at the climax, or leave it in an appropriate spot, start two, start three, do some... Sometimes being obvious is not bad. Sometimes I'll be obvious. So you can either do an abrupt stop or you can do a smooth stop. I do both types of stops. What I'll do is, one segue I'll use is I'll say something like, that's kind of like the time. And I just go on, and sometimes I'll do it really abrupt. Because then if you do an abrupt stop, like if you're in a business environment, you don't want to do abrupt stops because people will think you're crazy. You'd want to make it a little bit smoother if you're telling multiply embedded metaphors in a business environment. And even then, because you're going to have a lot of judgers in there, you're going to have a lot of people with a high need for closure, you may drive them a little batty sitting there. So what I'll tend to do is pre-frame it by, if I'm in a business environment, and say that they're working on multiple levels, I'm using multiple levels of communication if I'm in a business environment. So I'll tell them what I'm doing before I do it so they don't go crazy. Yeah. If I'm doing it in a therapeutic environment, you can either do it smoothly or abruptly. I'll do either or. If I do an abrupt stop, it'll be kind of like, so there I was, and I'm just coming to the edge of the cliff. And the feeling that I had reminded me of this time when I was, you know, you could even take it like that. You take something in the story that reminds you of some other story. And as I was coming to the edge of the cliff, that feeling that I got that was rising up inside of me reminded me of this time when I was in Florida. And what happens is the mind latches to what you last said, just in terms of people's thinking.
Now,
yeah.
Before you do M1, metaphor one.
Yes.